This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Powered by U-Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. A bit of good news, Malaysia has achieved close to 100% in net enrollment for primary education since 2013. But there's some bad news, because many children, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds, struggle with learning outcomes. So what can we do to resolve this issue? And really, what are the other challenges faced in primary education, since that forms the foundation of us, Malaysia, achieving a high income nation status? Dr. Tara Bete, she is the World Bank lead economist and program leader for human development, joins us to answer these questions, as it is based on a just released report entitled Bending Bamboo Shoots, Strengthening Foundational Skills. Thank you very much for joining us. So at the very beginning, why should we place emphasis on primary education? I had always assumed that it was tertiary education that had the biggest impact on the economy and our goal to transition to a high income nation.
Great question. So Malaysia's high income status aspirations are at risk because it does not have adequate foundational skills. So why are foundational skills important? Foundational skills such as literacy and numeracy provide you the base upon which you can build the more advanced and sophisticated skills that we need for Malaysia to transition into a high-income economy. So if you want to have innovation, if you want to have technological skills, you can't do that if your kids can't read and write by the time they've finished grade 5. Mm. And in Malaysia, what we're finding is that nearly 42% of students cannot read grade-appropriate text by the time they complete grade 5. And these are very simple texts. They can't read it and they can't comprehend it. They can't answer questions of that. Now, you tell me, will these kids then be able to build sophisticated, advanced skills in a global economy? Doesn't look like it.
No, and I think also that explains why we have a slightly elevated rate of people dropping out of school later on in when they move to secondary. But let's go back to this. The good part, which is where we have almost universalized primary education. How do we get it right? So at least we've got the students in the school. Let's get back. We'll discuss later what happens during that school period. But why have we got almost 100% primary school enrollment?
Yes, and Xiaoning, not only has Malaysia got 100% primary school enrollment, it has done this equitably. Mm. And this is what I want to spend a couple of minutes on, explaining what this means. So the survey, which is the Southeast Asia Primary Learning Metrics, they went into schools, they interviewed children, teachers, they tested children, they observed classrooms. And what they found was that whether you belong to the poorest quintile or the richest quintile, you're likely to have the same set of experiences in terms of math practices, in terms of frequency of language lessons, frequency of math lessons. This is amazing. A lot of countries do not manage to get that right. So Malaysia really needs to be congratulated in terms of being able to give very similar student experiences.
I was surprised by that, though.
Yes.
Yeah. But aside from that, I mean, is it also part to our strategy? Do the policymakers get a bit of a pat on the back? Because we do have this education blueprint. How useful was all this?
The education blueprint, Xiaoning, is perhaps one of the best education strategies I've seen. It tackles each of these issues. It talks about getting access right. It talks about equity. It speaks about quality. And what it does is it's based on a candid assessment of what the problems were. Okay, this amount of honesty and truth we don't often see in documents. Second, it has a lot of emphasis on getting implementation right. So there's a full chapter on implementation. Again, we don't see that in a lot of strategies. So the blueprint and the vision it laid out really deserves a lot of attention. And I think it's a great document. So I think it's played an important role in guiding the government.
Okay, a bit of good news. And what about in terms of political support to actually improve education? I do believe we rank quite high in that regard.
Absolutely, you do. I think it's been a national priority in Malaysia, and the government has walked the talk here. Mm. And I'll tell you how. First, financing to primary education and school education has been high. Okay, it's about 3.2% of GDP. It has stabilized at that since 2015-16. But more importantly, what has happened over the same period of time is that the number of children in school has reduced. So per pupil spending has increased by nearly 50% over the 10-year period between 2010-11 and 2020. So much more is available for students. Even if 3.2% is not as much as a country like Malaysia at its income level would perhaps normally spend, the fact is that per pupil spending has gone up. And that's great news in Malaysia. And so that's one part of the political will. Mm. The second part is in terms of the policies that have been adopted by the Malaysian government. Some of these may seem very commonplace, but they're really hard to do in most countries. I'll give you two examples. The first is improving the quality of entry of teachers. So new teachers now have to go through pretty strict processes to enter teaching. Mm. This is very hard to do in many places. There's a lot of lobbying against it. The second, Malaysia tests its teachers often. So in English language, for instance, they found in 2012-2013, that this was a big problem. They tested those teachers regularly. They gave them support and input to improve. They measured it and they made this information publicly available. This is really best practice. And at the World Bank, we cite this very often.
But yet, the learning levels is what's worrying. So it looks like the government is moving in the right direction, but the outcome is not what we want to achieve, right? So, for example, I read in your report that we spend, 12.5 years in school before we turn 18 in Malaysia, but the real amount of learning is only 8.9 years. And we compare that to Singapore gold standard, 13.9 years in school, but 12.8 years of learning. Is that why we have poor outcomes at the end of the day?
Yes, so a number of reasons why outcomes are not keeping up. And there's also a lot that one can do about this. But let me come to the reasons first. Mm. The first is about early childhood education. Now, Malaysia has done a good job in terms of expanding early childhood education. 90% of children have access to it, but 10% do not. When children do enter school in Malaysia, most do have skills, that school readiness skills, but many don't. So about a quarter of kids don't have school readiness skills. And this is a worry, right? Because the grade one curriculum is such that if you don't come with these school readiness skills, then you're not going to succeed. So this brings us to the quality of early childhood education programs. You might have reached 90% of the population, but many are not learning much inside. Why is this the case? Partly because many of the teachers are not qualified in the way that the blueprint had envisioned them to be qualified.
There was supposed to be a minimum standard of a diploma, but I don't think that's been monitored very closely
that
either,
hasn't.
Right?
It's about 50% have it. 50% don't.
Should we then consider starting primary school earlier? Because I see articles on that. You know, in Malaysia, primary school starts at 7. In some countries, it starts at 5. Is this a direction we should be considering then?
You know, I think the direction for Malaysia is to strengthen early childhood care and education and to build upon its existing system. It already has a structure. You don't want to undo that structure. It has a structure, but it needs to build upon it. It needs to follow the blueprint's recommendations. Make sure that teachers are not only qualified fully as envisioned there, but they're also continuously supported to improve. They need to have good professional development opportunities that engage them, that motivate them, near them. They can't be far away. So I would recommend building upon that system and making early childhood education compulsory.
Okay, but I also look at some other data, right? And of course, testing is important. So PISA scores come into the equation, which is, of course, the program for international student assessment. Now, compared to the likes of Indonesia and Thailand, for the most recent data we have dropped 6.2% from 431 in 2018 to 404 in 2022. Is this a consequence of the poor foundation of primary education that we have? I mean, because we have these poor outcomes, eventually we pay the price for it later on in secondary education.
Yes, Xiaoning, absolutely. I think that is, you've hit the nail on the head. We've seen an overall trend of decline in this PISA globally. And this speaks to weak foundations in school systems and in learning outcomes. So I think you've hit the nail on the head that you cannot fix learning at the age of 15.
It's too late?
It's too late because if your kids do not come prepared in grade one to learn, and then they don't learn anything by the time they're in grade five, really, on the one hand. And then teachers, on the other hand, are under this pressure to complete the syllabus. So if you get a student who's not come with school readiness skills in grade one, you can't wait to help that student out. You have to finish your syllabus. So what does the teacher do? They tend to focus on finishing the syllabus.
Yeah, and then that poor child just continues grade two, grade three, grade four.
And grade two teacher wants to finish grade two syllabus, not grade one syllabus, because they're being cracked on grade two syllabus.
Yeah. But I'm curious, why does the World Bank place so much emphasis on looking at something like the PISA scores, you know? Mm-hmm. Why is that so important that we should also, as a nation, look at this more seriously as an indication of the state of our education? Because some people say, oh, PISA scores don't matter, it's got no relevance, it provides a monolithic view of education. Do you agree on some level about that, that's not relevant?
So I think PISA is relevant, but it can't be the only measure that you look at. It's one among several. It's an internationally benchmarked measure. It gives you a good sense of where Malaysia's 15-year-olds stand globally. Malaysia's 15-year-olds, when they grow up, are going to compete globally. So we have to look at global benchmarks. But what the World Bank recommends is that we start measuring and understanding student learning early on.
In primary school, when they're in
grade one or two, because that's when you can really put in place corrective measures. It becomes too expensive if you do it later on. That's one thing. And the second is to track it regularly. These measures of student learning don't need to be high stakes. We don't want to stress out kids. We don't want to stress out teachers.
They don't have to be like intimidating
Not
exams,
at all.
Is it? Okay.
We just want to know where they are and how we can help teachers improve student learning.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dr. Tara Bete. She's the World Bank Lead Economist and Program Leader for Human Development from the World Bank. After the break, we continue our discussion on their recent report entitled Bending Bamboo Shoots, Strengthening Foundational Skills, with a focus on how we can correct the poor learning levels of Malaysian children, with a focus on teachers. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill, where the hot seat is Dr. Tara Bete. She's the World Bank Lead Economist and Program Leader for Human Development. This is, we're having a discussion on the back of their recent report entitled Bending Bamboo Shoots, Strengthening Foundational Skills. Now, I want to continue our discussion on education, and let's try and unpack why learning levels are poor. Now, what was interesting from the report is there is a whole subsection dedicated to nutrition and its impact on children reaching their full development potential. I've got some scary statistics here. 14.1% of Malaysian children under the age of 5 are underweight. 21.8% suffer from stunting. 9.7% from wasting. While on the other end of the scale, 5.6% are overweight and obese, and the trend has been worsening over the years. Really, what should we do about this? How important is this when it comes to children and them being able to attain their full learning outcomes?
This is fundamental for students being able to attain their full learning outcomes. And Shaolin, you've hit the nail on the head. The problem is worsening.
Yes.
And we really need to be worried about this. Now, if you look at the brains of an infant, a one-year-old that is undernourished and one that is nourished, you'll see that there are many more neural connections being made in the child that is nourished. And when that child then goes to school, he or she is at a clear advantage compared to the one where there's much less brain activity. So getting nutrition right is really step zero. And some of it begins when the child is in the mother's womb. And some of it comes later. Now, what can we do in the school system to be able to improve this? One of the things we recommend is to be able to have school feeding programs.
Well, it was recommended by one of the ministers to have like free breakfast for all kids. Would it be something that Malaysia should really seriously consider?
Yes, I think they should seriously consider.
Yeah, even though of course, people always question the funding, but clearly there is a high correlation. Now, I want to go back to teachers, right? We talked a little bit about that, and let me quote the report. Globally, teachers are the single most important school-based input contributing to school learning gains. And I think teachers are being recognised. There is a teacher strategy in the education blueprint, which is consistent with global good practices. But where do we fall short? Because we clearly do when the learning outcomes aren't there.
Absolutely. Look, let me begin by saying that this has to be the hardest job in the world. You are in a room with 20 to 30 students, all of them at different levels of learning. You can't hit pause and say, wait, I will figure out what to do with one child while the others...
29 are screaming.
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard to do that. And you can't do that if you are not trained to manage those situations.
Do we give enough training to our teachers in Malaysia?
Exactly. So teachers in Malaysia do get a fair amount of training. But what this report, what Bending Bamboo Shoots finds, is that the vast majority of children are taught by teachers who are not trained in differentiated instruction. Differentiated instruction helps you manage a situation where children are at different learning levels so that you're not teaching in a class where you're teaching to the top 10% because you have to finish the syllabus, but instead you're teaching to the entire class. No blank faces. You can manage different groups of students. And this is important. If you're trained well in differentiated instruction, then a teacher has a certain amount of autonomy inside the classroom to decide how to move with different groups of students. And we found in the report that about 57% of children are taught by teachers who are not trained in differentiated instruction. That is a large percentage.
Mm. So the government does have to actually take note of that. The other thing is that in your report, you say that for teachers to be effective, and you know, I think you've given some recommendations here, right? Where are our gaps in terms of ensuring that there is that effective teaching?
Absolutely. So one big gap, as I mentioned, is in teacher preparation and access to continuous professional development. This continuous professional development, I want to summarize quickly, in terms of good practice and good principles, it needs to be focused on its content. It needs to help teachers practice with colleagues. You can't just put them in a room, lecture to them, and end of professional development. They have to practice with colleagues. Then it needs to be linked in some way with their career. It cannot, you know, there can be, there has to be something to motivate them to go there. And finally, it needs to be ongoing. So it cannot be one-off. It has to be continuous. So these four principles are important in training programs. And we don't really know how much Malaysia's teacher training programs meet these good principles. So it would be good to study that a little bit. The second challenge that we came across in the report was that there are high absenteeism rates among teachers. And children reported for Malaysia that 40% of teachers are sometimes or frequently absent. That is a large percentage. Now, these are children's reports. Mm. We need to have unannounced random school visits to get the exact magnitude of this. We also need to find out how much of this is because teachers have been assigned administrative work that takes them outside the classroom. That's out of their control. So those are things that we need to do to be able to understand the challenge and the problem better on teachers. The second part of this thing is also understanding teacher performance management.
Yes.
Now, the blueprint does an excellent job in terms of its sets of recommendations. It says that, look, you have to measure and evaluate teachers where they are, to use that information, provide them good support. And then over a period of time, if it's not working out for some teachers, you'll have to release them or place them in a non-teaching role.
But how much of that is really done? Do we have the data to show that that's being done and tracked?
That is not being done, Xiaoling. It's quite visibly not being done. What we saw in our report was that teacher evaluations, the ones that are publicly available, are really very high. So about 0.02% of teachers score below 60% on their evaluations. Now, you tell me, when 42% of fifth graders cannot read with comprehension and 40% of children are reporting teachers being absent, how can it be that only 0.02% of them are performing at 60% or below?
Yeah.
Something is not working with
the
evaluation.
Yeah,
something is not working with the evaluation.
But on the flip side, right, do you think that we listen to teachers themselves as to what works and doesn't work? So, you know, the issue about all these blueprints is, like you say, our blueprint works. It sounds great on paper. But do we have less regard for the practicality of anything that we want to implement? How important is it to have this discussion with stakeholders to ensure that, you know, that we roll out a new, because the next education blueprint will be up soon. Is that critical?
I think it's absolutely essential that teachers have a clear say and voice in all of this, that we bring them in. Mm. We often find that when policies look good but don't work, it's because they haven't really taken into account teachers' everyday experiences in the classroom. So you give a teacher a policy, they don't know what the policy is because it's so many things sometimes and so confusing. You give it to them amidst all of the other work they're doing.
Yeah, so they don't know. And I found out that what admin work takes up 29% of teaching time.
Yes. So then they don't know how to do it. Mm. You know, and then finally they don't know why they should do it because there are no clear incentives. They don't see their kids improving their performance dramatically by following a particular policy because it wasn't clear in the first place how to do it. So it's really important to bring teachers in so that it's clear for them, it's doable for them, and it's rewarding for them. So we have to bring teachers in. And I hope very much that with the new curriculum, we are able to give teachers autonomy and we don't expect them to have these completely unrealistic syllabus completion expectations.
The other thing is politics. Unfortunately, I think in Malaysia, and I'm sure World Bank also observes it globally, education can be politicized. And policies come and go, ministers come and go, governments come and go. How important is it for us to have a longer term view in terms of education policy and be consistent with it?
Well, it's really fundamental. And you have a good starting point with the blueprint. And now there's going to be a new blueprint, which I hope builds upon this. So having consistency in those policies, implementing them carefully, evaluating them for what is being accomplished, and publicly sharing that information. And here I want to say is that in countries that have been able to improve their learning outcomes in a relatively short period of time, it has become everybody's problem. It doesn't just focus on the Ministry of Education. It's everybody's agenda to improve learning outcomes. And I think that's very important, that it's a national agenda. And it has to be, because this is what Malaysia's economic aspirations and realizing them depends upon.
And interestingly, I want to end on this, why you compare us with Vietnam so much. Is there a learning lesson for us, Malaysia, when it comes to primary education? Because, you know, if we just look at the statistics and think, what, 42% of Malaysian children can't read and write properly, we'll be discouraged. And, you know, but is there hope?
Yes, I think there is. So Vietnam, for instance, 18% of fifth graders can't read with comprehension by the end of fifth grade versus 42% for Malaysia. The PISA scores are also much better. They've been able to improve education outcomes in a relatively short period of time. And this is why we emphasize and quote Vietnam, that they are building these foundational skills that will help them with advanced skills and sophisticated skills tomorrow. So today they may be a lower income country, but tomorrow, they are going to be globally competitive. And we don't see that happening in Malaysia. And that's why I think the Vietnam example is very important. And what have they been doing? They've been actually implementing many of the tough political economy-related things on teacher management. Mm. So one of them is, for instance, if teachers don't improve their performance, and performance here is measured very carefully, then over a period of time, they will have to be let go of.
So they make the hard decisions for the kids.
Yes.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today in the Breakfast Grill was Dr. Tara Bete. She's the World Bank Lead Economist and Program Lead for Human Development. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
Business Fueling Minds, the Breakfast Grill with U-Mobile Biz, Malaysia's number one 5G network. 5G makes business sense.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.